Welcome to The Tipping Point, a podcast by the Heinrich Böll Foundation. I'm your host, Katya Kumkova. In this series, we're exploring climate change and what we can do about it. The food that we eat plays a big role in the search for solutions. Agriculture is one of the major contributions to climate change. But the way we farm our land can also be a big part of the answer. Certain kinds of soil are huge carbon sinks, which means that they take up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. There's more carbon in the soil than in all forests on the planet combined. Only the oceans store more. In this way, healthy soil can regulate the climate. The kinds of crops we plant play another crucial role. They can help us adapt to changes in the climate that we cannot prevent. Farming diverse crops instead of monocultures makes us more resilient. Join me in this episode to look at the impacts of industrial agriculture and how alternative practices can help. As it turns out, the way farmers nurture their crops can make a huge difference for people and the planet. Every plant begins with a seed. The wheat for our bread, the cotton for our clothes, the maize we farm as animal feed. Each year, farmers plant a myriad seeds on their fields. These different grasses, vegetables, and roots were once cultivated by our ancestors. But as farming practices are changing in many parts of the world, the diversity of the crops is at risk.
Well, I think we need to understand that agriculture has undergone a really dramatic shift in the last century.
This is Teresa Anderson from the United Kingdom. Teresa works for ActionAid, an international NGO. Her specialty is climate and resilience.
I mean, we've seen a change in which agriculture that used to be based on local natural resources really changing to a system in which farmers are encouraged to buy all of their inputs. So now farmers are largely being told that they have to buy everything from their seeds to their fertilizers to their pesticides to their herbicides, even their tractors and fuel has all become part of this modern agricultural system. Whereas a century ago, these inputs weren't really seen as necessary for successful agriculture.
What Teresa is describing is the industrialization of agriculture. Human cultivation of food has always had side effects. As people cut down forest and drained peat to make space for farming and animal breeding, soil often degraded. And with these changes, carbon dioxide was released into the atmosphere. But the rate of change in the past 150 years has been especially fast.
We've seen this so-called green revolution, you know, be picked up pretty much across the world, of course, in Europe and the US, but also very much in countries in Asia and across a lot of Africa as well. So, for example, we've been working in Malawi with farmers in Malawi, and there the government has been subsidizing chemical fertilizers for many years. So now small-scale farmers who used to use more traditional techniques and now have now become quite used to buying and using chemical fertilizers as part of their standard practice. So amid all this change, you know, this is being sold to us as increasing yields and increasing efficiency and increasing global food security. But there have been downsides. There have, you know, all this practice has taken its toll, not only on farmers' ability to control their own agriculture. You know, now they're told their own natural resources aren't enough, that they need to purchase all these materials.
In many places, the soil is so degraded that it needs more nutrients. So mineral fertilizers, such as nitrogen, are applied to boost the plants and feed more people. But this comes with a whole new set of side effects. If you produce fertilizers, you need huge amounts of energy. So you emit a lot of carbon dioxide. When the nitrogen fertilizer is then applied to the land, the process produces another even more powerful greenhouse gas, nitrous oxide. Its heat-trapping ability is almost 300 times that of CO2. And the problems don't stop there.
These chemical fertilizers that we're now increasingly using everywhere tend to kill microbes in the soil and fungi in the soil. And, you know, most of us don't realize that these microbes and fungi are absolutely essential to agriculture. We tend to be told that bacteria and fungi are really gross, but actually we wouldn't be able to eat without the bacteria and fungi that are in our soil. And unfortunately, the chemical fertilizers that we're applying tend to kill these off. That means we have less organic matter in the soil. And this has a real major impact because actually this organic matter is really useful for holding water and rainfall in the soil. And this is becoming really key now in the face of climate change.
It's right there under our feet. Soil is one of the most precious resources we have on our planet. It's a living substance that provides the basis for much of life on land. But it's threatened. According to the UN, 30 football fields of arable soil are lost every minute. And most of this is due to industrial farming. And while land is becoming scarcer and more degraded, more and more people need to be fed. Providing this nourishment is a question of justice. At the moment, the power to sell and allocate food is shifting towards the hands of only a few. And a huge new challenge is on the horizon, threatening our farms and food security: climate change.
We should now recognize that not only has agriculture had a big shift in the last century, but we're now in the middle of another big shift for agriculture that we need to deal with, and that is climate change. So with climate change, as the earth gets hotter, this is really disrupting the planet's water cycles. So that means that farmers are having to cope with really different rainfall patterns. You know, in many parts of the world, you could always know that the rain was coming on the 15th of October every year without fail. It always came and lasted 2.5 months. And agricultural systems were developed in order to expect and rely on this kind of rainfall. But nowadays, with these disrupted water cycles, farmers never know when the rain is coming from one month or year to the next. So the rainy season might come early, it might come late, it might not come at all. We might get too much rain, we might get too little rain. Temperatures might be too hot, too cold. So really our farming systems are very much disrupted now by climate change. And the industrial system that the planet has largely got hooked on in these last decades is really very vulnerable because it relies on regular rainfall and it relies on being able to promise that the crops are going to get a large amount of water at a certain amount of time.
This means agriculture and climate are closely tied together. So the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, or FAO, has started using a new concept, climate-smart agriculture. The idea behind it is promoting better farming practices around the globe. But it might actually do the opposite. We talked about this with Marianne Bassi Ruje, an environmental activist in Nigeria. There, she coordinates the program of food sovereignty for the NGO Friends of the Earth.
Basically, it's the industry that's been coming up with an array of terminologies and terms. We have so many reasons to be suspicious and worried about this terminology and approach. It really has nothing to offer. It's more chemicals, it's also monoculture, centralization, I mean, global market expansion for carbon. I think the term was hijacked.
Marianne tells us about an incident of a farmer who came to her office. He told her a story that made her suspicious of activities in the agricultural industry.
A farmer called me and told me that he wanted to see me, that some people gave him some seeds, and he wanted to find out if the seeds are okay for him to plant and what they do to the environment, our soils, and the health of the people. So I asked him, who gave you these seeds? Could you find out go back and find out who this person is and where these seeds are coming from? And he said, he went back and came back to tell me, he said they are premier seeds. And I said, what did they tell you about the seeds? He said they should grow them after the first rains and come for the seeds again.
Traditionally, farmers harvest their seeds from their plants at the end of the season. They save some for next year and trade some amongst each other. For generations, they have been independent of seed companies and have been able to preserve unique local species. Many of these are adapted perfectly to cope with local weather extremes like droughts and floods. But now, it looks like seed companies are trying to promote new varieties of crops. We asked Teresa Anderson what she makes of this story.
See, I don't know exactly what kind of seed that is, but one suspects that the trick used by companies in every product around the world, you know, giving free samples in order to get you hooked. And that is a key strategy for the survival of industrial agriculture, making you dependent on a product that you need to buy year after year. It's no good to them if you take the seed and thank you very much and go away and save it and then never need to come back to them again. They want to make sure that you're coming back to them every season so that they can expand their profits. And this is the model of industrial agriculture. But if we're buying our seeds from a company every year, that means we stop growing and adapting our own local seed diversity. And that means as a result of this, seed diversity, agricultural diversity around the planet is disappearing because farmers are being encouraged to abandon their own local varieties and use industrial varieties instead. And this means in the face of climate change, they have less diversity to rely on.
So having a wide variety of seeds at your disposal is an important tool to adapt to a changing climate. But many farmers grow only one or just a few varieties of crops. In the case of small-scale farmers, this has to do with the market. They rely on one cash crop, but if there's disease or a pathogen, they might lose everything. In the case of large-scale farming, hundreds of hectares are covered with monocultures and mostly exported. In both scenarios, less diversity makes farmers vulnerable. So being climate smart in agriculture is important. But unfortunately, the label is now being used everywhere.
Pretty much anything can be called climate smart agriculture, and there's nobody to tell them, you know, that they can't. So corporations, you know, industrial agriculture corporations, the very worst offenders have jumped on this bandwagon and are using the term climate smart agriculture to define their own practices, you know, so that they can carry on business as usual. So Monsanto, which is the world's largest producer of genetically modified organisms, GMOs, is now telling the world that they are climate smart. Yara, which is the world's largest fertilizer company, is telling the world that they are climate smart. Even McDonald's, which produced 2% of the world's beef, claim that they are using climate smart practices. And the reason these corporations are able to use this term is they can claim that by making slight tweaks to their systems, perhaps through efficiency gains, they are now being climate smart. But if they use that branding in order to expand their businesses and overtake other systems, then they are increasing emissions overall, which is of no value to the planet.
Speaking of fast food chains, industrial meat production also has major impacts on soil, biodiversity, and the climate. Many millions of tons of meat are consumed every year, mainly in industrialized countries. And the cattle, pigs, and chicken need to be fed. So soy and other crops are grown in vast monocultures of genetically modified organisms, or GMOs, which need a lot of fertilizers and pesticides. According to estimates by the UN, around 3/4 of the world's arable land is now directly or indirectly used for producing foodstuffs. This leads to tremendous changes, including deforestation and the degradation of soil. Combined with the extensive use of fertilizer and pesticides, this results in a huge amount of climate-damaging gases. This is why many civil society and farming groups have come out in opposition to the term climate-smart agriculture. They say it has become a gateway for greenwashing, or making something just seem good for the environment. Instead, they're promoting another idea, agroecology.
What we find now is that using agroecological practices, which is a little bit like organic agriculture, but particularly useful for small-scale farmers, in, you know, changing practices away from these chemical inputs and remembering that local natural resources can actually provide pretty much everything that you need in order to grow crops and survive. So now we're working with farmers and training them to use these agroecological techniques, such as composting, putting manure, putting mulching, which is like maybe using grasses or fiber materials to cover the soil, And this really, all of this actually helps to keep water in the soil, act as a carpet so that the water doesn't evaporate, and also to build up organic matter in the soil, which is full of nutrients as well. So you don't even need the chemical fertilizers.
Together with her organization, ActionAid, Teresa has helped spread the word about the principles of agroecology. The results have been good and have convinced farmers to continue working with this approach.
We've worked with farmers in Malawi, for example, who have been told for many years that they need to be using chemical fertilizers. You know, we train them in how to use composting and how to apply mulches. And they tried these techniques just within these last couple of years. And last year, well, 2015, 2016, saw a major drought across the world caused by El Nino. So there was very little rain. But farmers that we work with reported that because they had put compost and mulch on their soil, when the rains came, the water didn't evaporate from their soil very quickly. So they were able to harvest a normal crop. Whereas other farmers, say, you know, could be farmers in the same village who didn't use those techniques, got maybe a third of their normal harvest because there was so little rainfall. So those farmers that we've worked with have been completely convinced that they need to sort of start using these agroecological techniques to build up their soil, because that is really going to give them the resilience they need in the face of climate change.
Agroecology doesn't attempt to offer standard solutions or the one right way of doing things. Instead, it encourages farmers to share their knowledge to find crowdsourced solutions beyond the industrial model. And in many cases, the knowledge is already at hand, says Marianne Bassi-Rouge.
Our local people know how to farm with small, healthy farms, small hectares, and with diverse crops. You know when the rain is coming. You know how the leaves are going to fall. You plant a tree, it falls there. You use the cows in the farm. It's everything. It's a cycle. There's harmony. And farmers have the solutions. I mean, somebody will grow okra, maize, cassava, all in the same farms, provides food security. That is, like I say, working with nature, working with the soil, working with the plants.
Small-scale farmers provide 70% of our food. And around the world, they're coming together to share practices and ideas for farming that benefit all. This includes local communities and their food security, the environment and its biodiversity, and the climate. They're rediscovering older techniques like planting crops together with plants that attract or push away unwanted critters and weeds. This way, you don't need to spray the fields with pesticides or herbicides that threaten bees and other pollinators. Farmers are also developing new approaches, like a system called rice intensification, or SRI for short. The technique has already revolutionized the field by introducing new ideas and principles globally. The approach has substantially raised both the yields and the farmers' income, and it also preserves biodiversity and reduces water use as well as costs. More and more ideas like these are being developed by farmers themselves.
With agroecology, the farmers use what is already in nature. Like, they don't put in chemicals. They use the manure from the trees, the leaves that decay. They use different techniques that are already in the land. They grow different crops, crops that can provide water for the crops. It's a holistic way of growing. People can have different things. You can go to your neighbor and borrow seeds. The neighbor can come to you. You can save. You can try many things. They're working with nature, not against it. You're embracing diversity.
In many places, farmers and clients are now also working together more closely than before. This community-supported agriculture circumvents big players in the middle like supermarkets and food companies. It provides healthy and seasonal food for clients and a stable income for organic farmers. To Marianne, the adoption of agroecology is the way to go, but the transformation towards it needs political and financial support.
I think there are other things we can also do, and our government could also do, reorientation of policies and funding, and take a look at research priorities away from this dominant agricultural, industrial, agricultural model to agroecology. Why should businessmen who sit in their offices tell Nigerian farmers what to do? It's not their job, it's not their business, telling us how to grow our crops, how to lease our crops with chemicals, making us more sick, degrading our soils, polluting our environment, and releasing more chemicals into the world. I think there are very clear answers. The solution is agroecology. Agroecology is farming that is in harmony with nature.
While claiming to feed the world, industrial agriculture threatens our soil, biodiversity, and environment. And it has clearly reached its limits. In many places, the harvest doesn't grow anymore, despite heavy use of fertilizers, pesticides, and herbicides. On the other hand, farmers around the world have gathered a deep knowledge over generations. They know what to grow and how to grow it best. Agroecology encourages them to build on this knowledge and share their practices for a better climate for everyone. As you can see, soil is more than just brown dirt. It's a precious resource providing fertile ground for the food we grow. It can hold massive amounts of carbon, more than all forests combined, and it helps us to adapt to the climate change already happening. So taking good care of our soil, making sure it is healthy and alive, is absolutely critical. The same goes for the diversity of crops we plant and eat. And for this, we need to redefine the way we farm, pivoting away from industrial farming to agroecology. My name is Katya Kumkova. Thanks for listening to The Tipping Point. You can find all episodes of our podcast at boell.de/tippingpoint. That's boell.de/tippingpoint. The music for this episode comes from Crinkles and is released under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Stay tuned to our next and final episode of this series. We'll be looking at the transition ahead of us. What's the path to a better and just climate future? Hope you tune in again. Bye-bye.